44. Internet sales of George's book skyrocketed, until it temporarily reached number 4 on the nonfiction bestseller list, behind 2 racy Hollywood memoirs and a diet book. Online reactions to the Times article were ubiquitous, heated, and often vicious. Mind control, human lab rats, death cult. Caro realized that the battle for the project's public reputation was going to be fought not in the scientific journals, but where all battles were fought now, in the media. She stood in the security office and surveyed the scene outside the compound gate, as captured on external cameras. Reporters had accumulated like beach flotsam after a storm at sea. Vans and cars parked willy-nilly, with a big tarp strung between 2 vans to create shade, lawn chairs crowding underneath. A woman sunbathed in a tiny bikini on a huge beach towel. Reporters talked into booms suspended over their heads by sound crews. An enterprising island truck sold coffee and sandwiches from its open side. Styrofoam cups littered the ground. A honey bucket shed stood under a tree. Through the chaos, Ellen threaded her way toward the gate, immediately set upon by people shouting questions. Julian said to Caro, "And she didn't tell you why she's coming?"
"No. You said that cell conversations might be picked up with the right equipment. She just told me that it's urgent, but isn't about Kayla or Lorraine."
The mob tried to follow her inside, but were pushed back, and the gate closed. Ellen, swollen-eyed and pale as beach sand, looked even worse than Julian. She was trembling.
"Sissy?" Caro said and moved toward her.
But Ellen looked straight at Julian, who seemed to have turned to stone, and her voice held steady.
"It was me, Julian. I leaked about the project to a Florida Town Crier reporter that I happened to sit next to on the plane to the States. And when that article was so awful, I called the New York Times to get a better reporter. It was me. I didn't know all this would happen, or anything about the horrible dark web stuff. I just wanted people to know that their dead loved ones aren't really dead. I just wanted to share this incredible miracle you all created, because it seemed so wrong to keep it to ourselves. I just wanted to help with other people's terrible grief, like you helped with mine. I just wanted to help."
Caro couldn't find words. She stared at her sister, who stared back for a long moment and then began to sob.
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't realize."
Familiarity rushed over Caro like a spring breeze. This, she understood. Ellen was in trouble. And Caro again had words, actions, attitudes.
"Don't," she said to Julian, who'd opened his mouth to speak. "She only meant to help."
Caro put her arms around Ellen, and Ellen, taller by 6 inches, bent to bury her head in Caro's neck and hang on. George, and where had he come from, said quietly,
"Take her to your room, Caroline, and stay under the walkways. There are drones with cameras flying around out there."
By the time they'd reached the safety of Caro's room, that's how she thought of it now, safety, Ellen had stopped sobbing. She sank into Caro's desk chair. Caro took the bed. Ellen said,
"I didn't think it would go like this."
"I know you didn't. I know that.
What do you want me to do?"
Caro tried to think.
"Where's Kayla?"
"At the airport.
She and Lorraine are going to board a plane in less than an hour."
"A plane?"
"Yes. I don't want all those reporters with their TV and online shows bothering Kayla. They would, wouldn't they? I'm sending her and Lorraine back home. Mrs. Foster said she'd put them both up until we can make other arrangements. I called her."
It took Caro a moment to remember who Mrs. Foster was. The leader of the church ladies, Ellen's former neighbors who'd organized Angelica's funeral. Napoleon with a stew ladle.
"Where did you get the—" "Lorraine paid for the airline tickets." "Caro, I'll do whatever you and Julian want me to."
"I don't know what that could be."
"But Ellen—"
Caro couldn't say it. Not any of it. This was Ellen, who always acted from the heart,
and that heart a generous one, filled with concern and kindness for other people. For her father, bullied and belittled by his wife. For Angelica, a child so disabled that most mothers would have institutionalized her. For all those people out there who grieved for their dead. There wasn't enough kindness, enough genuinely sweet natures in the world. Caro knew that she herself did not possess one. Nor did Julian. He would throw Ellen to the journalistic lions if it would help the project. Not a reliable source, recent mental patient, misunderstood the work here. "You're going to need to leave Cayman Brac as soon as possible," Caro said.
"But you said Julian would have to decide what..."
"I'm deciding. I don't think the two reporters you talked to will reveal their sources. But you just walked into the compound 10 minutes ago. So eventually, the others in that mob out there will identify you as my sister."
"How?"
"I don't know how they do those things. Facial recognition software, maybe? But they do it."
"We have to get you out of here," she thought quickly. "I'm going to talk to James."
Ellen left the compound in a grocery delivery truck, dressed in work clothes supplied by James, with a plane ticket to follow Lorraine and Kayla off island. Julian, to Caro's surprise, did not berate her for this.
"As long as you're sure she won't do any further blabbing."
It was a measure of his agitation that he used an un-Julian word like blabbing. "She won't," Caro said. The PR firm crafted an alternate view to the Times article, designed to accomplish three things. Put the project's work in positive terms, sound scientific rather than woo-woo new age, and offer the public something they might want. PR did a credible job, although Caro and Trevor were surprised to discover that the project now had a catchy name. "Reality Check?" Caro said. "Wasn't that a rock band in the 1990s?
"I don't know. And how do you know? You were in grade school."
Ethan, 6 years older, had liked Reality Check. Trevor said,
"The PR people are creating an interactive public website for us, which, incidentally, is putting Julian's techies in a snit, since they're all convinced they could do it better. The PR cyber people are also manipulating what comes up on Google and other search engines. I don't know how they do that, but apparently only 47% of Google users go beyond the first two search results, and 89% don't look past the first page. So they want to control what is seen first. At the meeting you skipped..." "No, it's all right, Caro. There's no reason for you to go. I'll be your conduit for information."
YouTube videos were made. Statistically valid samples of posts on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and selected other social media were analyzed. The dominant reaction was skepticism, which at least was better than vicious contempt, although there was enough of that to sicken Caro. Trevor said,
"Schopenhauer, all truth passes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it's violently opposed. Third, it is accepted as being self-evident."
"I don't think," Caro said, "that these trolls have read Schopenhauer."
"No, but Julian's PR people are going to launch phase two, mounting a serious campaign in serious popular venues. That's what Julian told me he'd really wanted to do in the first place. And of course, he was right."
"What serious venues?"
"If they can get it, 60 minutes.
With, depending on the content, as many as 10 to 15 million viewers. Caro blinked. "Really? Is this PR firm that good? Can they really get 60 minutes?
"No," Trevor said. "I don't think so. Not for this. Not unless reporters tie Ben Clarby's murder to alternate mayhem, which so far they haven't done. And let's hope they don't. That kind of publicity we absolutely don't need."